thankful again to the committee for the opportunity to come and share this time with you guys. I'm thankful to have a couple of my classmates and friends, Freddie Lord, as well as David, and Curtis came as he's walking in. Great people to know and to have rubbed shoulders with throughout my journey in life. I want to set a framework before I dive into this thing. I want us to. No, I can't force you. I can't bully you into this. But I want us to feel safe to talk. I want us to take a chance within the next 40 minutes or so. I want us to be honest. I would like to invite us to. So, for example, I want to invite, since most of you all are white, I want you all to feel comfortable disagreeing with me. Right, that's the kind of environment I want. I don't want to be the black guy that's telling you what to do and how you ought to feel and all that kind of stuff, without inviting you to say I want to push back on that, or without inviting you all to say I just can't see that. It's just I see it differently. So I want to invite you all to do that. I will not call you racist. I will not write you up. I will not sue you. I will not do any of that. But I want this environment, even though this is just one session, but I want this environment to be a space where we could chat. So let's imagine us being in Starbucks for a cup of coffee. With almond milk. I'm vegan, so I don't. you got your black coffee. I got my ginger tea, and we're chilling. We're hanging out. That's the environment I want us. I want to have right now. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Good. If you all don't mind, can you pair up with someone? Just pair up with anyone. And I listen, you all about to do something that's going to be highly uncomfortable, but it's effective. So do not be upset with me. So you can find a partner. Does anyone have a partner? Please have a partner, because I don't want to do this myself.
You cut out an even number.
All right. It has to be a pair. So if you don't, I'll partner with you or whoever wants to. Tell you if you mind coming up here, we'll do this practice together. Oh, great! There's a partner right there. Awesome. Right in time. Saved my life. If you don't mind partnering with what's his name? David. Yeah. If you don't mind partnering with David, that would be great. Any introverts here? Wow. All right. Well, introverts, as a fellow introvert, I'm going to apologize in advance. So, in South Africa, there is a Zulu greeting that goes as follows. Sui bonai. Sui bonai. Go ahead and repeat after me. Sui bonai. Yes. Sui bonai. And this greeting means "I see you," right? So, when two individuals are getting ready to, have an encounter, one individual will say "Sui bonai," which means "I see you," right? And then the individual receiving that greeting will respond by saying "Niki honai," "Niki honai," which means I am here. So sui bonai means I see you. Niki honai means I am here. Speaking of the humanity, speaking of the essence of someone's humanity, I see this human being. And the human being responds by saying, because you see me, I am. I am here, I'm present, I'm alive, I know this, but I am here because you see me. There is a spiritual connection between two individuals when they encounter one another, when they see acknowledge, recognizes the presence, the humanity of someone else. I see you. And because I see you, you are able to say, I am here. And I think a lot of the tension that rises in humanity across so many genres and themes, whether it's sexual orientation or race or whatever the case may be, is the lack of us seeing one another, affirming our humanity, and the receiving individual being able to say, because you see me, because you recognize me, because you honor my existence, I am now made alive in your presence. I am not a ghost. I am not a peon. I am not someone that you walk on. I'm not half human. I'm not 20% human. I am fully human because you've recognized me as a human being. Now, I could easily say that, you know, in American culture, we could easily say, well, I'm independent and I'm alive and I am a human being. I don't need you to validate my humanity. And one instance that might be true, but I think God created a system where we are made alive because of one another. We need one another, right? So I want to invite us to pair up with one another, or to find a partner. And this practice that I want us to do, I want us to stare in each other's eyes.
Tell us when you want us to start.
Yeah. And exactly how long.
I want us to try to read one another's story by staring at each other's eyes. Staring to each other's eyes. I want us to see one another. And through the eyes, we will be able to communicate a narrative. Through the eyes, we will be able to sense energy. Through the eyes, we will be able to interpret or get a glimpse into how someone feels about something. So, I want to give you 20 seconds to prepare your mind to do this practice. And while you're staring into each other's eyes, I want you to fight the temptation to not look away. I want you to be locked in, zero in, into that person's eyes. And I have a few things or a few questions that I'm going to raise throughout this practice. And the eyes will communicate to the individual how that person feels about that particular question or, current series of events that I'm going to raise. So that was 5 seconds for me articulating that. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we have 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Oh, I have a partner. I was hoping not to have a partner because I didn't want to do this. If you don't mind coming to the front, I'm not gonna put you on the spot, but we have a practice that we're going to embark on.
Okay, I'll
play. Thank you. You can sit here if you want, or
I have to sit. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't have to. I'm sorry. Yeah, you can sit here. So what we're doing? We're going to stare into each other's eyes. And avoid looking away, but try to listen in to the stories that we share, mm-hmm. just by looking into each other's eyes.
Okay.
And then it's going to be some things that I'm going to raise that hopefully through the eyes we'll communicate how we felt about it. I'm going to put some gum in my mouth because I'm going to talk right in front of you and I'll let you smell my breath.
Well, okay. I just ate pretzels.
Well, you won't be saying anything.
Okay,
you
can be saying good. Something. I can
okay.
be quiet.
Is that cool? Okay. So, we're at the coffee shop. We're relaxed and we're engaging one another. All right, so let's turn to each other's eyes. No talking, please.
Can you see that person that you're looking into? Or you're looking at? Can you see their joys, their passions? Can you see them struggling with something? Is there something bothering them? Is this human being that you're looking at, are they happy? Are they sad? Is there a question burning in their hearts? When you think of race in America, how does that make you feel? When you see the injustice that is displayed all over the news, right in front of your face, how does that make you feel? When you hear of a little black boy with a bright future, with dreams and aspirations, life is taken because his cell phone was mistaken to be a gun. How does that make you feel? When you think of Donald Trump, when you listen to his rhetoric, what kind of emotions, fears, perhaps excitement, joys that arises when you think of him? When you think of, or read of, or see white supremacy groups protesting, fighting for their rights, their privileges, what are your thoughts? When you think about race, do you find yourself scared, hopeful, numb? Do you see me?
Thank you, everyone, for engaging that practice. Thank you so much. What is your name?
Dorothy.
Dorothy Seaton. Thank you. What was that experience like?
Intense.
It was intense.
Yeah. Awkward.
Awkward.
Yeah. Uncomfortable. I haven't looked at somebody that long seriously. I can't remember the one.
Yeah.
For that long.
Yeah. Powerful. What did you say?
Uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
Yet intimate.
Uncomfortable yet intimate. Wow.
Sorry. I read everything again.
Emotional.
Emotional. Mm. I was hoping nothing was in my nose.
I didn't see anything.
Good, good,
good. She was looking.
Do we see one another? And have we realized that we are more than our issues? We are people who are loved and capable of loving. What is it about us that makes us human? According to the Zulu tribe and other African tribes, until you have seen me, I have not existed. Until you have seen me, until you see me, until you have stepped into that space where you know me, you can sense or perhaps even know my narrative, my story. Until you see my fears, my dreams, my triumphs, those moments where I'm panicking, until you have come to terms with my human experience and have validated that, have acknowledged that this is my human experience, until you have come to terms with that, that I have not fully existed in your presence. My human experience may not be your human experience. But nonetheless, it is a human experience that must be acknowledged and respected. When some Europeans arrived in America, they arrived with a sense of confidence and momentum, which eventually led them to have power and control. This power and control have been passed down from generation to generation. White people have always had power in America and continue to have the majority of the power here in America. Therefore, the way white people see the world is through the lenses of power and privilege. That is a human experience. When Africans arrived in America, they arrived oppressed, robbed of their dignity and culture, and was taught that they were not fully human. This experience and ideology has been passed down from generation to generation. From the likes of Frederick Douglass to Harriet Tubman to Malcolm X to Marcus Garvey to the late great Dr. James Cone to Louis Farrakhan, to Angela Davis, to Michael Dyson, and on and on and on and on. Blacks have always been on the pursuit to not only fight against white supremacy, but to also find their identity as a collective. Therefore, the way black people see the world is through the lens of the oppressed and a constant fight for dignity, equality, and freedom. When white people think of terrorism, most of them think of ISIS. But when black people think of terrorism, we think of white supremacy and the corporations and the individuals working for them. There are two different human experiences at work as we think about racial reconciliation. Blacks, from the very rich white folks to 44 presidents, including the current one we have now, to law enforcement, to for-profit corporations, from white institutionalized academic settings, even in our white churches, black people have been fighting against discrimination and injustice. When white people say that things has changed and we're not living in the Jim Crow era anymore, blacks are able to say, yes, we do not live in the Jim Crow era, but we live in the new Jim Crow era, the era of mass incarceration, in the era of police brutality. So, with that in mind, as we think about these two human experiences, the question that I want us to wrestle with is, do I see you? Do I see you? Do I see the next person or the person sitting next to me? Do I see him or her? I'm not speaking of just physically seeing the human being, but am I aware of that person's human experience? And do I have the guts to say I affirm that person's human experience? It may not be my experience, but do I have the guts and the courage to say your human experience is real? If you are a white leader, or if you are a God-fearing white human being, if you are someone who is serious about engaging the racial tension that continues to exist in our society, here are a few introductory tips. Remember, we're in the coffee shop, all right? I know I kind of talking like I'm, or speaking as if I'm in lecturing mode, but remember, let me calm down. Let's get back to the coffee shop. But here's a few tips that I want to draw to your attention, and then let's have a conversation around these things. The first thing I would like for you all to do, I would want to invite you all to do, is listen. Listen. As one who has a counseling background, I have learned that one of the best ways to help my clients think through their current situation is by offering a listening ear. And this goes beyond the idea of the topic that we're talking about, but just in general, when we're thinking about relationships in whatever form or fashion that may be, humans desire to be heard, right? Has anybody ever vented before? You just, my therapeutic analogy for venting is vomiting. When you vomit, you just want the toilet or the trash to receive the toxic waste that's within you. You don't want the toilet or the trash to diagnose your filth or give you a report of your, you know, your illness. You just want the toilet or the trash to receive it. So as is when we're venting, when we're sharing, articulating what's going on with us, we want the individual to just simply listen. Listening is a powerful instrument that we can offer to those who have felt and who are feeling mistreated and marginalized. My dear friends, if you may not understand the abbreviated Black experience that we and others have shared, or the robust explanation of the things that we are experiencing here in America, but if you have the courage to sit and listen, even if it births various emotions within you, even if our narrative rubs you wrong, your listening ear is significantly important in this healing process that we need to continue to embark on. If you cannot listen to our narratives, then we will not be heard. And if we feel as if we cannot be heard by you, then we will not be able to connect and come together to build a more harmonious society. And I'm fighting for this for my children. I'm fighting for this for my last name. Angela Davis once said that, "I know racism will not end in America, but my fight is to make America a little bit better for the next generation." So not only are we are inviting you to listen, but secondly, we are inviting you to take off your shoes. A common ideology that has been promoted vastly throughout America is this notion of pull yourself up by your bootstraps. This ideology has helped white America to be the powerful country that it is today. This ideology has been used as a suggestion for Black people to embrace and to apply, to get over Jim Crow, to get over racism, to get over discrimination, to fix your community, to fix your home, cut your grass, work hard, make your money, obey law enforcement. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We have set you free. Now go make something of yourself. During the Poor People's Campaign, Dr. Martin Luther King, as he began to see the hypocrisy of that notion, said, "A bootless man cannot lift himself up by his boots." So to my white friends, if you really want to engage in our experience, we are inviting you to take off your boots and put on our shoes. Walk in our shoes. Walk the steps that we walk. Live in our communities. Send your children to our schools. Become members of our churches. Live next door next to me. Live next to me. Smell what I smell. Eat the food that I eat. Embrace the culture that I live in so that you will be able to feel, taste, experience what it means and feels to be Black in America. Just a glimpse, right? Just a glimpse. So not only do we want you, or we are inviting you to listen, not only are we inviting you to take off your shoes, but lastly, I want to invite you all to speak up for us. to use your whiteness to speak on my behalf. Now, I am an individual with 2 degrees, 2 master's degrees. I would be considered, I have a business, I have a full-time job, I have a ministry, I work for nonprofits. I am a person that many people will say is a model or an example of how you should live your life and what you should do to be successful. And that might be valid to a certain degree. But I am fully aware that with all the accolades that I have, I am still black. And I could articulate as intellectually and sociologically sound as I can to express what it means to be black in America, but the color of my skin is still a barrier. And I am aware of that. So then the call is to play chess. I'm gonna tap the shoulders of my white friends and encourage my white friends to speak on my behalf, to use your whiteness and your white privilege to help your family members and your friends and your churches, your political connections. Help them see that Black Lives Matter is not a diss to whiteness. It is a cry to society to validate our blackness. That Black Lives Matter is not an organization that says kill all law enforcement. It is an organization that's raising awareness to how we are being mistreated unfairly. I need white people to tell white people that. I can say that, but it's not going to work. I need you white people to say it for me. So not only am I inviting you all to listen, not only am I inviting you all to take off your shoes, put on our shoes, live in our neighborhoods, eat in our restaurants. But I'm also inviting you all to speak on our behalf. But you won't be able to speak on my behalf if you do not see me. So do you see me? With all the black marks in my face, the big nose, the bald head, the oversized dashiki, do you see me? If you don't see me, then you won't understand me. And you will not be able to connect with me. And I will not be able to connect with you. And that is the nightmare. The nightmare is that we don't see each other. We don't know our narratives. We don't know each other's narratives. We don't know each other's fears and dreams. When a cop is behind me,
preach.
You don't know the fears. You know how it feels to see the red and blue lights flashing behind you. So, let's talk. I'm done running my mouth. I want to invite you all to talk. Let's talk. How do you feel about what I've just said? Let's start with our feelings. How do you feel about what I've just said? Again, please feel safe to be honest. Please feel safe. I want you to be honest. I want to see you, too. Rick?
Oh, I'm going to say this out. You know, I came here last minute. I'm glad I will be the first to say and admit that I don't understand Black history and your pain to the death of
them. Yeah.
And I need to.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I've lived around, I live in San Jose now, but I'm from Chicago and Detroit. So I've been around black people my life.
Yeah.
And to some degree, more than any other people of color, I've been on pins and needles.
Yeah.
I've been And part of it is when I first engage with a conversation, I'm trying to determine how much, where are you on a top of mind, you know, feeling, you know, my black heritage, my race. Where is that as I enter into my first conversation with you? And I'm trying to figure that out because it's going to adjust how I'm going to align with you. How, is it called
yeah.
you, Bona? How, what was the name of that phrase? I see you.
Sui Bonai, I see you.
Bonai.
And
like
Niki Honai is.
And I'm trying to figure out how can I get to that point as quickly as possible. And I somehow have to figure out where you're at first and align with that. And I see that, you know, I see where you're coming from. I see pain.
Yeah.
But I also see anger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I see you looking at me, and I see you looking at me as being white, and white privilege,
mm-hmm.
and white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to figure out where I am on that scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're trying to figure out if I have that bias.
Yeah.
And what my goal in those first few seconds is to figure out how we can get the Sui Bonai as quickly as possible, we can both put that behind us, and go on in a relationship, because I don't look at myself as white supremacist. I don't see myself the way you're looking at me. And quite frankly, I have no idea sometimes in those conversations if I'm ever going to be able to get there because you want to see me as a white supremacist. And I don't know how to align with your pain and where you're at in a way that you're going to finally accept me. I have no idea how to do that sometimes, especially if there's anger.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's fair, but that's, I'm trying to figure out how to get there. I don't know how to get there.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. And let's talk. Let's all talk. I don't want to piggyback off of everyone's comments, but let's have a conversation. Yeah.
I didn't know what this was about, but I'm glad I'm here. I've had some discussions with a couple of friends the past 3 months about just our faith and being Christians. And we talk about how back in the Old Testament days, how God created Adam and Eve and how he created the first families and how, you know, then we had the flood, we had families created after that through Noah. And everybody was just family. Right? I mean, there were different nations and people, you know, God created you know, all the families through Noah. And I think we've kind of lost sight of that we really are all family, right? And it's painful to me that we don't see each other that way. Because that's how God sees us. It does anger me when I hear of all these things happening because how somebody sees another person. and it's both sides. You know, I see it on both sides. And I think that if we are truly people in this room who want to be, who we believe are called to God's purpose, we will stop it. As much as we can, we will speak up. We won't be afraid. We won't care what our neighbors say or our own family members. I've had to say this to my own close family members about racism. How's that right? And we have to do. We have to do that. We have to be brave, or it's not going to work. And God doesn't see us as black or white or Chinese. He sees us as His people that He created, and His
gonna live for him, we better get over whatever it is that causes us to see it any differently.
I think that as a person, I'm obviously white, growing up with a ton of privilege, and I think that for white people, I know that a lot of people that are within my own family, that are within close circles of mine, that would call themselves somebody who is open-minded, who wasn't racist, but in the same breath would say, I don't understand what their issue is. Mm. I don't understand what the struggle is. And I think as people in general, I think the scope of our history seems so long ago. Well, slavery was so long ago. All these really oppressive issues happened so long ago. The Civil War ended in 1865. We are not far removed from a time in our history where black people were not acknowledged as human beings. We are not far removed from that. And how can we understand someone's humanity? How can we understand their struggle when I can't even imagine the kind of the sort of hurt, the sort of injustice that's ingrained in a black person from the moment they're born.
Yeah.
Just that mentality of we've never been viewed with the lens of equality. We've never been viewed in this lens of equal humanity. And the kind of emotional baggage and the spiritual baggage that you carry along because of that inheritance, if you will. I can't imagine what that's like, and I think that's, to me, what feels like the barrier with a lot of white people, is not being able to recognize that, well, yeah, we don't have slavery in that sense anymore, but what about that indoctrinated oppression? What about those feelings that you inherit when you're born that you've never experienced? I've never experienced. How could we possibly understand? And recognizing that as humanity, I see you. I see your pain. I see your baggage, even though you may not have directly experienced that. It's painful.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher in an urban school that's 99% Latino. I have to walk into that room and we have to talk about serious social issues, and I have to teach them from a place of being this privileged white woman.
Mm.
And you have to be able to break down those barriers and see them for their humanity and for their experiences. And you cannot do that without first breaking down your own
powerful
ideas, your own conceptions of who
powerful
they should be.
Powerful. Powerful.
Coming into the relationship. Mm, mm, mm,
mm. Oof. It's powerful. There.
One thing when you were talking, I came in a little late, but I always try to see things from both perspectives, and the first thing that was going through my head is, all right, it sounds like Stephen is telling the white people to do a lot of things, but then kind of letting black people off the hook, like, what do I have to do? Like, all
right,
right, I'm gonna sit down and chill. I'm good. They need to go and understand. So that originally was my critique, where I'm like, well, you're presenting a challenge to whites, but what about African Americans? And then when I started thinking about it more, I thought about how whites, they have an option of if they're going to interact with blacks, whereas most African Americans, we don't have that option. So for me, growing up in schools, like, I have mostly white teachers. Like, that's mostly all black experiences. When you grow up, you are taught by whites. But most whites can't grow up saying, I had all black teachers growing up. It doesn't happen. When it go to, I went to Abilene, I went to Pepperdine, you want to know who my professors are? Like, I may have had one, or I think I had one black Ray Carr, you know, I had one black professor. You look at the jobs I had and the bosses I had and the interviews I had. Like, all my life I've had to navigate as a black man in a white world. So I had to listen and understand and build relationships, and I know how to talk to white people and shake their hand and do all of those things, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to get a job.
Right.
Or I wouldn't
right.
be able to get into school. Or
right.
I wouldn't be able to pass a class and things like that. So just from what you're saying, it makes sense that some people don't have an option to, am I going to learn more about you? No, if I don't learn more about you, like, I'm not going to be able to be successful in America. But how many people have taken time to learn more about me and my culture? And
yeah.
things like that.
Well said. Well said.
I've lived a lot of my adult life outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, even coming back to the U.S. in 2008, we had to do a cultural catch-up.
Mm.
There were a lot of even expressions that were being used that my wife and I were like, I've never heard that. What is Black Friday? I had no idea what Black Friday was because it didn't exist when we left. But I think it would be helpful for a lot of Americans to go and travel and see other cultures, to go to Africa, but not just to go to Africa, but to go to other European countries, and even if you can experience those and see that, you know, you're not like those people. That's been helpful for me, is to see people that are different from me, and they're looking at me and they're saying, you're different, you're not like us. And that doesn't like solve all of our problems. We're always going to have racism. I think it's a process for me. I'm still learning. But I think one of the things that Jesus did that helps me, and I always come back to that, is he always gave value to people.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of their context, he always gave value to people. And, you know, the disciples struggled with racism.
Mm-hmm.
They were racist.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jewish nation, they were racist, and they were punished by God because of it. That's a lot of what 78 AD was about. But, you know, so that should sober us up a little bit. But, you know, my church, I love my church. You know, we haven't arrived in any way. We have racists in our church. We're struggling with racism, but we have an integrated eldership. 30% of our congregation is black. We just hired, I'm very proud, we hired a black minister, brother. And these aren't guys that came from the outside. They grew up, they were discipled and grew up in our church, so we were able to glean from, you know, the growth in the congregation. So it hasn't been easy. It's been a struggle, and it's still a struggle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's you know, I don't agree with everything you said, but I want to hear the other sides of things.
Yeah.
I want to hear it. Because you know what? There's probably a possibility there's some things that I don't really understand very well. There might be a possibility.
Yeah.
So I always want to keep that up.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway,
that's great.
My
that's
story
great.
A little bit.
I see that. Appreciate that.
When I lived in France, I had people who were racist towards me.
Yeah.
That was a very good lesson. It was very helpful. It was
yeah.
very helpful.
Gotcha.
There were French people that looked at me and treated me in a way that was just racist, you know, because I was an American, you know.
Thank you for sharing. It's good. It's good.
One last comment. Thank you, especially to everybody, brothers and sisters here. My comment is simply this. Thank you for this opportunity to learn
mm-hmm.
and listen.
Yeah.
Constantly been in my life in a multicultural environment.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the world where it's not the same probably, but when they would say a blanc peau, white person, blanc peau.
Blanc peau.
Blanc peau, which is Creole in Haiti. But where I'm coming with is we, like the brother before me, multicultural environment where we worship and live. We're still reaching, still trying to grasp the concept that some may look at me and I'm prejudiced and have to prove myself not so. In other words, they may take that. But I think the sister here said it best. We have to, we're dealing with the aspects of it. We're brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. We're family. And to start there. Mm-hmm. And my family is grounded in sharecroppers. And we grew up in that. And so my comment is that when I quit trying to learn more about how not to be prejudiced, I just became prejudiced even more. Mm. I have to reach constantly. And there'll come a time where God will make us all equal and excite of each other. Mm. And we take that look. I praise you and thank you for your time.
I am going to have to go, but okay. I know you. My name's Garth Hunches. I live just out of Philadelphia. We talked, so.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm going to connect with you later.
Yeah.
So. I'm sorry. I got to get to another, my brother-in-law speaking.
So. Yeah, no worries. No worries. Thanks for stopping by. So. How do y'all feel? I want some emotions. How do y'all feel? Do I feel uncomfortable? I feel angry.
Yeah. Totally mixed up. Good mix.
Yeah.
Not a bad
mix.
It's a good mix.
Yeah.
It's an awareness mix.
Mm.
It's a savvy mix. It's keep working at it.
Yeah.
What we have to do.
This is one of the first conversations I felt like I could actually have an open and honest discussion.
Mm. Praise God. Good.
It's
mission accomplished. Praise God.
We're so leery of doing it because we don't want to offend the
truth. Right.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I just want to say, I feel like I feel sympathy for white people, in that I know it might sound like we're making the blame. You know, we're talking about history and the history of the country, and that's just unfortunate, but it is what it is. And so, in some ways, we're not asking you to fix anything.
Mm.
You can't fix it. We're just asking for you to help and listen. I think that's important. It's just hearing and not feeling the need to be defensive. Well, no, that's not true because you don't want the country to be a certain way, because you don't want our experiences to be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make it so.
Yeah.
We just want, like you said, the validation that, wow, that's your experience. I can't even imagine that. And you just leave it there. It's nothing to be fixed. And so I wouldn't look at you as a white supremacist. I understand the history of our country. And I don't want people to be fearful of engaging, you know, African Americans or any other race, because you can't fix our problems.
Hmm.
But like you said, there is truth in the fact that it takes someone outside of the race to help people in other races understand in some ways. I heard a really good talk yesterday. I think his name was Jeff Brown, who's a white minister, and he did a story of, he was talking about the Good Samaritan and the choice of the priest and the Levite to cross the road. And he framed it in this context that we have to choose to cross the road to see people.
Mm.
You know, instead of just walking past someone with blinders on, like, I just don't want to see that because it's uncomfortable for me. You have to choose to cross the road and say, you know what, I do see you in the ditch. Tell me what that's like to be in that ditch. I want to hear you. And so we just have to make that conscious choice. That's the hardest and most difficult thing. And in his experience, he started realizing that, you know, he really wanted to advocate because he adopted a daughter, an African-American daughter. And through that experience, he was exposed. And he saw things he had never seen before. And other white ministers that he found that, you know, were speaking up, they also had that same experience where they had adopted a child outside of their race. And then all of a sudden, they were having very different experiences. They were aware of experiences that they had not been aware of before. So they became, you know, leaders on the forefront of like, wait, you guys need to wake up. This is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I walked in, this happened. When they walked in, this happened. This is what I'm hearing from my child. And so...
Yeah.
Until you're willing to take the risk of, you know, just tell me about your experience. There's no way for you to know. You know, that's why I can't blame you for not knowing. You just don't know what you don't know. but we have to be able to listen
yeah.
and accept and know that why don't we make these things up?
Mm.
You know, when you hear these stories, there's no, we have nothing to gain, so just listen. But I do feel for people because I do understand that feeling of helplessness to hear someone
mm-hmm.
struggle and not be able to do anything about their pain.
Mm-hmm.
But you are doing something when you just listen and validate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Blessing. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I feel heartbroken that people made in the image of God might feel like they're lesser somehow or be treated as lesser just because of their skin color. That's how I feel.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Chris.
Just want to amplify quickly something that my sister said and you mentioned about the power of advocacy from white Americans.
Yeah.
The issue that sticks with me, so what the emotion I have has nothing to do with what's happening in this class as much as when I think about my experience in America. I'm fighting the temptation to become extremely bitter about the interactions between people of color and the police force.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of it is that I know that what we see are the highlights.
Right.
It's like there are millions of interactions where people are treated fairly, sent on their way, etc. But
mm-hmm.
we do see the stories where people ran a red light or had a taillight out and they don't go home to their family anymore.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I would invite all of us, including people of color, but also our white allies, white friends, is to pay attention to how the police treat people. And then if there's a way for you to intervene
mm.
and help that to turn just
yes.
a hair,
yeah.
that's progress.
Yeah.
So that would be my amplification.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
I appreciate that encouragement. I'm reminded of the saying that says, if you don't say something, you're saying something.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I guess
you get the last word.
Oh, if I'm the last word.
Oh, I'm gonna see after you.
So,
second to last.
You know, I just want us all to recognize that we all have biases,
mm-hmm.
And I think that it's all of our responsibility to realize that and to not only practice and, you know, speak in such a holy way while we're at church or while we're at the lectureships, but to carry this, you know, in our workplaces, in our schools,
yes,
you know, because it's just so, it's real easy to be open and honest and to apologize and to plea while we're in this type of environment.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's when the rubber meets the
mm-hmm.
road, when we're out there in our communities,
yeah.
Where this really makes a difference.
I kid you not, that was my last word. That's exactly what I was going to say. Absolutely. Well said. This is nice that we've been able to do this because we all believe in Jesus and all that good stuff. Now the challenge then is for us, again, as my sister wonderfully said, go out into our spaces, whether it's white, black, diverse, I don't care where you are. We are called to be change agents.
Mm-hmm.
Let's lead from that framework. The salt of the earth, the light of the world. We don't shy away from confrontation. We don't shy away from darkness. We don't shy away from conflict. But we want to engage it. We want to spark the conversation. We want to lean into it. We don't have all the answers. We don't have all the theological conclusions down. And we're going to make mistakes. All right? On both sides. We're going to make mistakes. But mistakes are opportunities for us to do what? Learn. So I send you all off. To spark this conversation. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.